Okay, well, there we go. There we go. All right. My phone's yapping at me. All right, well, good evening, everyone. And my name is Maria Johnson, and this is the first call of 2019, first LHON conference call, and we welcome you here. I do have our other two co-hosts on who you will be hearing throughout the year as we rotate months. We have Jessica Loomer.
Hi, everyone.
And we have Andy Marks.
Hey, y'all.
And you'll hear their voices different months as we all rotate. The purpose of this call is to have conversation and build camaraderie and get to know each other in the LHON community. It serves as a place that we can come together at least once a month and talk with each other. The conversations are usually, it's not recorded, so they may just go where they go. So feel free to bring up any topics that you want. We only ask that you do not bring up topics such as clinical trials, treatments, cures, you know, that you've just heard about, or how anyone is doing, or how anyone's opinion on clinical trials or any medical advice. That's we leave to the professionals, which we are not. So if that does get brought up, I will divert the question, and we will continue on with other questions and comments. So tonight we have a guest. Her name is Candace Haney, and she is from Leesburg, Virginia. And I met Candace. I told her I was going to do this. I met Candace when I was very first affected. I was, of course, totally overwhelmed, had no idea how I was going to do this, anything like that. I was a mom. I had two kids, and how was I going to do this? And I put out on the group that I wanted to talk to a mom. I needed a mom who was affected to tell me how I was going to do this. And Candace immediately messaged me her number and said, call me. So I did. And I'll tell you, that call still remains very special in my heart because it was the call I needed to get through a pretty dark moment of what the heck is going on. And to know that someone else, you know, was there for me, gets it, could give me advice coming from experience was, you know, money couldn't buy that. Money could not buy that. So Candace was there for me, and here I am 5 years later, and, you know, we're still doing it. I'm still hanging in there as the mom and doing all those good things. So, you know, it really does make a difference when you reach out to folks in the community. And that's the point I wanted to make with that. So I was really excited when Candace said she would actually be my guest. So Candace, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Maria. That call meant a lot to me also. I think just every time we get to share our stories, you know, individually, it's a big deal. And, it brings back that connection of being able to relate to other people and relate to my situation, relate to another situation. Because when I went, my story starts with, when I guess I'll just start where it's going to start. Anyway, my story starts in 2005 when my son, who was at the time 10, I have four children now, two sets of twins, and I think I almost accidentally hung up. I had two sets of twins, and at the time they were 10 and a half and 1 and a half. And my 10 and a half year old came home from school and said, Mom, I can't see you to do my homework. And we had a Christmas party to go to, and, we're fast family because having four young children, lots going on all the time. And I said, just get it done. And he said, Mom, I can't see. And I just couldn't understand. I'm like, it just didn't make sense. And so, he had been talking about maybe either something was changing with his vision, but not having any LHON we didn't know of in our family, it really just didn't make any sense. And I think that is a lot. I'll relate to that at some point in our stories. So got him to the eye doctor, and the eye doctor says, I don't know what it is, but I have a feeling you're going to have to go to Children's Hospital Los Angeles and probably have spinal tap and lots and lots of tests. And so, we went to other doctors in our area. We lived in Las Vegas at the time, went to other doctors and, you know, got the common, he's faking, because I've been watching him from the cross, you know, the doctor saying I've been watching him and I can tell he's faking it. Or, you know, my boys at the time, like I said, they were 10. So, and being twins, and they were very rambunctious, and he had a tiny bruise under his eye, and the doctor, the pediatric ophthalmologist says, you know, how are things at home? And I'm like, oh, that's where you're going. Okay, that doesn't, you know, not it at all. But next, we'll see the next doctor. And because then he just says, well, it'll clear up in about 2 weeks. And obviously that wasn't the case. So long story short on that part, so we went to Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, and Dr. Borchert that we saw was, he said pretty quickly that he thought it was LHLM. So then that was overwhelming, like, what does that mean? You know, what do we do? And right around the same time he was being diagnosed, we were moving from Las Vegas to Phoenix, and we fell into a school, it was a very good school district with an amazing TBI, which when you have a good TBI, you don't know any bad TBI. But there are, you know, they are out there. So we got really lucky right away, and we learned a lot pretty quickly on how, you know, just blindness related, because we were, you know, never around anyone who had lost their vision or was blind. So now fast forward to 2011. We now live in Leesburg, Virginia. And my daughter, who at the time, now in 2011, was 6, and she started complaining about some vision loss, and so we got her right away to Johns Hopkins, and so she was diagnosed, and she, with LHLM, so now she's affected, and she has the least amount of vision loss of the three of us, and within a few months of her losing some of her vision, I lost my vision. And of the three of us, I have the most extreme vision loss. And so in about August of 2011 is when I lost my vision and was diagnosed. When I was going through my mind, I was in such denial that there's no way that I was being affected, because the doctors were like, well, it's not supposed to affect women, which I'm sure that us women have been told. And let alone, you know, my age. I was 38. I just turned 38. And so just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, and then accepting, like, this, you know, I'm now affected by the LHON. Now trying to figure out my role again, because my whole entire life was turned upside down, and you know, I didn't feel like the mom anymore and the wife, because I was felt completely helpless, and I had no clue what I was going to do or how I was going to get back my position. My role was a stay-at-home mom, and my husband traveled at the time. You know, luckily not at the time, he wasn't traveling, but for work. So I think one of the hardest at the time is he took my daughter to get her haircut, and that kind of wrecked me, because I did that stuff. So now he's doing everything, which, you know, I super appreciate. And looking back, you know, he had to. And so it took me a while to figure out. So then again, in my situation too, I need to connect with other women, because I knew that I wasn't the only one who was going through this, or who, you know, another mom who was blind, but I needed to get in contact with other women who were blind, who were moms, to figure out how they do it. And, you know, I met some friends through Facebook, through some blind, some other blind ladies, and they were super helpful in, because their attitude was so, this is what you do. It's just what you do, you know, and so that helped a lot. And, you know, it's like, well, like cooking wise, how are you doing that? And so they were just like, just like you would, you know, like just like you cook, you just, you know, well, you just do it, you know, just a little different techniques, but, you know, you'll get it, and just practice, and, you know, and it was one of the most helpful things is to make sure that I was around people who I could relate to, whether it just be on the phone or, you know, just reading people's stories. And I think that that really made me more comfortable and confident in my abilities as a mom, and then getting my roles back as, you know, the major leader of our house. And so now I have a lot under my belt as far as, like, you know, meal planning, dinner time, grocery shopping, getting things done, that I'm not relying on other people like I was in the beginning. And, you know, just figuring out little things, how, you know, I still put my makeup on now, you know, still. And, you know, people ask me, oh, who did that for you? And, you know, they get shocked. And then, like, they don't, you know, they have a hard time thinking that I could cook. Or, like, if they're over and I'm dicing an onion, they're like, oh, be careful. And, like, I've been doing that, you know, like, be careful about what?
So anyway.
So now I think Maria and I had talked about, like, you know, we would, you know, I would tell my story a little bit, and then we would kind of talk about, like, different techniques that we do, or, you know, things that make it easier, and things that we just don't even realize how that we do every day now that makes it easier and just good.
And I remember on that first phone call was I said, how do you get your children home from school? I mean, it was simple little things like that. That, you know, after a while, it's like, well, yes, you have to do it differently, but it can be done. How do you make your kids' lunches? I mean, that's the state I was in. I just didn't even know how I was going to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I don't think I had, my vision hadn't really decreased to, you know, to the point of stability. So I was, I think maybe in my mind thinking, okay, this is going to get bad. So, you know, but Candace, you had the answer. You, you know, you just said, well, you know, I have friends and I have my husband and my baby, you know, and I'm like, okay. So she's doing it. So I'll be able to do it, but it was still really, I still wasn't, had my head wrapped around it quite yet. But you even told me the haircut story, and that was like, wait, that was part of the things I did, and now I can't do that. Or at that point, you thought, I can't do that. But now we know, you know, there are ways that we could go do that. And one of my favorite stories is, I think you might have told it on another call, Candace, was your kids wanted to go for ice cream. And your husband had come home, and he was too tired. He didn't want to go, and you went, you know what? You got an Uber, took your kids to get ice cream, hopped back in the Uber, and came home. And I'm like,
I mean,
that is how you do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That was so powerful.
I was waiting around for other people.
I don't have it on mute. Just so you know, I don't have this call on mute right now because it's been really quiet. So if you can kind of refrain from speaking or pressing the mute on your phone, that would be terrific. Or *6 if you don't have a mute button on your phone. But Candace, yes, it was that right there was a example, and it was reinforcing for me to say there's ways to do it. And if you have to just take charge, figure it out, do what you have to do to be that mom, to do the things that you used to do and didn't think twice about it, but now we have to think twice about it, you know, there are ways to bring back those, you know, mom skills, if you will. And but it's just done with a little extra help and a little extra assistance. And the one thing that you and I do have in common as well, speaking of assistance, is that you have been an Ira user for a long time. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about some of the things that you, you know, some of the maybe some positive experience with Ira, or maybe something funny you've used it for or didn't expect?
So I used Ira a lot this last month in Christmas shopping. I would go and, like, kind of do some searches on, I'd, like, take my kids' Christmas list, and I would call Ira real quick, and I'd say, okay, I have a link here to, say, I don't remember, a couple websites. I wanted to get a couple sweaters for my daughter. And I would say, I have a link that I'm going to send you. There's a, inside the app, when we're on the call with Ira, inside the app, there's a a function where you can send them a message. So I copied the link already, and I was ready to send it. And I said, I want to shop. I want to, you know, as quickly as we can. I want this, and I'm going to send you the link, and we're going to get the sweater. And so that one of, in my mind, in the most last probably 6 to 9 months, it was the best probably 45-second call I've done. The guy was on it. He clicked the link. He said what size, what color, credit card number, and it was done. And it was like, oh, my gosh, that was faster than I could ever have shopped anywhere, even if I could see. You know, I mean, it was so great. So then we also did I found a little Ulta, like stocking stuffers for Ulta. And, you know, I probably spent 10 minutes with an agent helping me pick some stuff out for not just my daughter, for my whole family, you know, like the whole and that was so helpful because, you know, stocking stuffers are something also that, like, it's, well, shopping for that, those little things, you really kind of feel like you do need somebody else's help. But go ask my family. I'm getting so sick of asking my family for help. I just, it's hard to ask for help in general. And when you have Ira to ask for help, they're not helping you. They're like working for you. And just asking really quick, say, hey, I need you to look this up. These instructions, or I want to learn how to work. You know, you've got a new dishwasher. I want to figure out how to do the dishwasher, or can you tell me what it says? Instead of like calling in one of my kids, which gets, you know, they don't want to come in there anyway. And I don't want them, you know, to have to listen to them complain. So, Ira has really helped. I mean, not be afraid, or not that I'm afraid, but just in front of anybody, I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm on Ira, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a quick second. I thought I probably should have explained what Ira was before we started gabbing about it. What Ira is a service that you download an app, and you can click on the app, and you will be connected to a live person who will be able to see through the camera on your phone. They are trained people, agents, they call them, who have gone through a month, like a boot camp training, and weed it out if they can't cut it. But they are there, and they know how to speak to people who are blind, visually impaired. They know the words to use, how to do directions, how much detail you want to hear, how much detail you don't want to hear. And they are ready and available at any time. Unlike you said, Candace, our kids is like, wait a minute, or they don't want to come, or they just, you know, rolling their eye. You can just feel they're rolling their eyes at you. An IRA agent, I don't think ever rolls their eyes, at least I don't think they do.
No.
But they're always, and they, you know, no judging either. And it's really a great service. It is a monthly service, and it's really great, and you can always look it up, AIRA, on the internet, and check them out. They're a San Diego-based company, and I'm connected with them pretty well. But anyway, Candace has been using it for a long time. I've been using it for about a year. And anyway, I just wanted her to say some of the things that she thought was really cool as far as assistive technology goes. But to be independent, of course, is something that we all want. And I know what you mean about the stocking stuffers is that you don't want your kids to buy the stocking stuffers because, you know, it's quote-unquote, Santa's supposed to bring the stocking stuffers. So, you know, if they bought them all or helped you buy them all, then it's really not that fun, you know, Christmas morning. But, you know, again, trying to still do the things that you did before. I did all the Christmas shopping. I did the stocking stuffers. I made, you know, all of that stuff, right? So, now how is your now tell me about your son. You have twin boys, and one is affected. And can you tell me, you know, how was school for him, and maybe where he's at now? And because I think, how old is he? How old are the twins now, the boys?
The boys are 23. And so school for him was good at the beginning, and he was in middle school when he lost his vision, and then he had a really great TBI in Phoenix, and then we moved out here to Leesburg, and their thought process, so his TBI, who was in Phoenix, was blind, And she was one of the first people we really met who was blind. And so she was just like, well, this is what we're going to do. This is how it works. This is, you know, I mean, and she just set him up to succeed. And it really went really well. And then until he got into high school, their thought process was, you know, just because his vision really needed, he needed to learn Braille. His TBIs here in Virginia wanted more large print. Because I don't think that they were as equipped or as knowledgeable in Braille as he was. He really learned a lot right away in middle school, and they almost couldn't keep up with him. So they kind of let him slide a little bit, and then, of course, like there were no expectations here. So he kind of struggled with, you know, they weren't challenging him at all, and they were just relying on him to get all of this stuff together in large print. His vision was, you know, bad enough at the point where he really couldn't rely on large print, and he really kind of got passed through a bit. And but he graduated really good and from high school, and he went on and did a couple semesters in Radford, and now he's still home, and he works at an assisted living facility in their dining area and their kitchen area, and he loves it, and they love him, and he has helped me adjust really well, because his attitude in, you know, in his daily activities is very positive.
Yeah.
So he could tell, like, sometimes he can tell that I get frustrated, and he's like, Mom, what do you need? What are you doing? What are you trying to do? And so that it's always helpful to, you know, when just one on one with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and he's probably at the age now that he can have, you know, good conversations about that and that kind of thing with you. Yeah, well, that's awesome. Now, your daughter, she was affected at 10, at what age?
Okay, so she was just, actually, she was 7. She's almost seven. And so she has still quite a bit of vision. She, you know, rides a bike, and she babysits, and she's very active, and she definitely reads larger print. That's helpful and very good for her. So she's 14 now, and she's in the 8th grade, and she is learning Braille, and also, you know, they do a lot, and they have Chromebooks at school, so she has an iPad and a Chromebook. And a pretty good TBI, which is helpful. I am very confident with her TBI. So,
that's good.
Pretty good.
You've had the experience with your son, so you know what works, what doesn't work. So that's awesome. And now, I think I remember you telling me your story about when you started to lose your vision. And I think you were at a hotel. I don't know why I think that.
Yeah,
you know,
how funny. Yeah.
Yes, and you're like, I can't see anything through the peephole or something like that.
I was like,
is that when it all kind of started, like something was going on?
And I there was something I kind of thought, maybe, you know, I think I need to go see an eye doctor when I'm getting older, which I wasn't, that's not old. So we were on our way out of town, we're going out of town, and we'd stopped and spent the night. And my husband and my son were bringing our stuff in to the hotel room. And I looked at the peephole, and I thought, ooh, that's gross. It's all dirty. So I walked away, and I waited a little longer, and I thought, gosh, they have been really gone a long time. And back with my other eye, I looked at the peephole again, and I thought, oh, that's not the peephole, because it was clear now. And I thought, oh, my gosh. So then the whole week, the whole trip, you know, I was, you know, closing one eye, closing the other eye. And my left eye was, you know, my vision was grainy in the left eye, and I thought, God, that's weird. Like, what does it mean? I mean, and I had no clue, and I just didn't let it go. And it didn't even cross my mind that it would be this. And until they finally told me for sure. And Johns Hopkins, like a month and a half later, you know, we don't need to like test your, you know, DNA test. We know this is what it is. And
right,
that was hard.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, you probably didn't want to believe it was actually happening to you.
It didn't, not at all.
Children. Yeah. Now tell me, you said your vision was probably the worst of the three. Can you tell me what your vision's like?
So I have some light perception, and really that's it. It's just a mild light perception, not even really shadows.
Okay.
If there's a light in the room, I can tell where the light is, but
okay.
It doesn't cut, the shadows. But,
Yeah. So, I mean, that just really tells the range of LHON vision is, it can get, to light perception, but also like your daughter, being younger, has quite a bit of vision. And then there's everything in between, because I think folks often think, everyone's going to see the same way. And although most of the time it's central vision and peripheral, most of the peripheral is preserved, it can go a little bit either way. So, so obviously you do have to do things a lot differently than some folks who maybe just use magnification for things. And, I mean, that obviously doesn't work for you. So, I can see now, because I knew your vision was bad, but I can see now why, using assistive technology like Ira, when you have somebody else's eyes at your disposal 24/7, is, really a benefit for you. So, I'm so glad that you found that technology too. So, Candace, we could go on forever, I know, as women folk do. But I want to go ahead and open up the call, and I did not mute, and you guys have been so great with being quiet. I wanted to open it up to anyone who might have a question or a comment about anything that Candace had to say, or maybe something, reminded you of another situation or another thought that you might have. Now we turn it over to you folks, the listeners, and speak up if there's anything you'd like to talk about or talk to Candace about.
Hey, Candace, this is Wayne. I might have asked you this years ago, I don't know, but I was diagnosed at Johns Hopkins in 1980 and by Dr. Neil Miller. Just curious who you were.
Yeah, hi, Wayne, how are you? No, it was Dr. Subramanian at the time. And then afterwards, so that was who diagnosed me. But then my daughter, we took her to the children's, the pediatric, and I think it was Columbia, Maryland, is there. And then we recently, I think it's been like a year and a half, we went back and saw, Miller does sound a little familiar. I don't remember.
He's still there.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we did see him. Interesting. Maybe we did the last time. Because we all went in at one visit, and just to get a base again and whatever his status was.
Candace, do you have your other children who are the other twins? Do they all have baselines with the doctors as well?
Kinda. So. I guess they do, because we went, like I said, about a year and a half ago, and it's just to make sure that, no changes or, and that was helpful. And then we've also developed the patient relationship with, Johns Hopkins there as us. We're all patients now and not having to wait for new patient status, but yeah, so that was been helpful.
Yeah, I've had folks ask before if, do I need to have my unaffected children looked at by a neuro-ophthalmologist? And, if there is LHON in the family, of course. And, some people do, some people don't. My kids are not affected, but they have seen my neuro-ophthalmologist twice and have had, the baselines done just in case, one of them sees a change. They will have, unaffected baselines. So I think it's a good call if anyone's curious. Is there anyone else who has anything they'd like to speak up about or ask any questions?
So what is a TVI?
It's the teacher for the visually impaired.
Oh, okay.
And they teach the technology, whether it be technology or Braille, or help the teachers, you know, find ways of different techniques that work, different just labeling practices or just different things that help. And, you know, obviously the TBI is there for the student, but also for the teachers. And so most of them are great.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Candace, it's Liz. I was wondering, did you ever attend the NFB conferences, or have you been a part of their group for parents with blind children, and has any of that been helpful for you if you did?
Yeah, so I am active with the NFB of Virginia, and I've attended, I did not attend this last state conference, but I've attended, we've lived here for 7 years, and I've attended five of them, and I've also attended one of the national conferences that was in Orlando a few years ago, and I follow the NOPBC on Facebook, their Facebook group, and it's really active and it's really helpful. And I mean, I think the thing that I like most about NFB is they just really try to preach independence and what you can do for yourself. And I think that helped me see a lot of the professionals. There's a lot of professionals in NFB, which is National Federation of the Blind, and seeing, you know, these professionals and these, you know, men and women and parents and, you know, adult children or children who are blind, how they do it. And I think that another, being able to relate to people like that was really helpful. And I have attended, you know, the conferences, get a lot out of it, just the different laws and they try to pass, you know, help pass just to help individuals with blindness and who are visually impaired and blind become more independent. Yeah, I do. I do like the NFB, but not every, you know, it's personal.
Yeah. Anyone else? Any questions or any thoughts? And it doesn't even have to be anything, like I said, that Candace talked about. It could just be maybe something that's on your mind or something, you know, maybe ask in the groups that you want to talk about.
Oh, hello. Do I have the floor?
Yes, you do.
Oh, I'm involved with two particular things through the Canadian National Institute of the Blind. I was called to a particular incident. We had some one of the top ophthalmologists, different people, and the topic was how to let people know about blindness and how they perceive it. You know, you get everything from pity to God knows what. And there's been a side track of that, too, is that how people with disabilities, like blindness, are taken advantage of. I don't know, maybe in the States you have no problem like with this, but up here there's a few issues. So, I mean, even though we all have Elhan, we still have to be vigilant. You know, there's things up there, you know. And also, like I said, people. One of the things that came up in our group is, how has your life changed, or how do people perceive you since you've gone blind? I know this is totally probably off the wall, but that's kind of what things are going on up here.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Huh. Yeah, well, I think, this is Maria. I think, you know, obviously being vigilant and being advocate for yourself, going out and with confidence, even if you don't feel confident, you know, be it with a white cane or a guide dog, you know, coming off as uber confident, you know, actually can be something that protects you from someone taking advantage of you. But I think it happens, you know, even to you know, sighted folks. But I think people think they can get away with things because we can't see well or hardly, you know, not at all. I just had an incident the other day where I was at a store with my daughter, and this woman cut in front of me. I was waiting in line because my daughter went to go get something. I had my cane, and this woman cut in front of me as my daughter was coming back, and I think because she didn't think I'd know. So I said, I'm like, excuse me, I'm in line. And I think I kind of shocked her because she's like, thinking, how did you see me, kind of a thing. But and there's other things that have happened that, you know, maybe I don't catch, but my daughter might see, you know, that just, you know, are a little bit weird when people are around me. But I think people, well, one, they're awful and mean if they take advantage of anyone with a disability. But the perception of people who are blind is that, you know, you can't see anything. You're not going to be able to defend yourself. You won't be able to identify anybody. And, you know, could it be the perfect victim? I don't know. But, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, I have heard of incidents even here in the state of that happening. And it's, you know, I think, you know, people, as I learned in some classes that I took, it's, yeah, don't go out at night into a sketchy neighborhood with all your jewelry on. I mean, you know, stuff like that. So anyway, but it's a good point. I mean, everyone needs to be vigilant.
Can I say something about that also? I think what I find and what we struggle with at times when I'm out with my family, my husband especially, and I, so we go to a grocery store and I'll say, I want the special cheese. And we'll go to the cheese shop and the, you know, the lady or the person working behind the counter will look at my husband because I have my white cane and they want nothing to do with me because that would freak them out, like to talk to somebody who's blind. So he'll turn his head completely and look at the ceiling as they're looking at him. And then, you know, so then he'll say, you know, he'll like squeeze my hand or whatever. So I'll know that they're ready to talk to me. And I'll say, hi, I'm looking for, and then they really have a hard time. But I think I have to initiate a lot of the conversations to make sure that they understand that I'm only blind, not, you know, I can still speak.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then, and that kind of messes them up a little bit because they're not prepared for that, which I'm not sure why. I still don't really understand that. And even to the point where I go to pay, I pull my money, my debit card, my credit card out of my purse, hand it to them, and they still want to turn and hand it to my husband, hand it back. And so, again, he turns his head, he looks away, and it's like you have, you know, like to force these people to look at me as a person, which really gets overlooked a lot. And I don't,
yeah,
just, you know,
yeah,
you can only change it one person at a time, but to show, you know, that's perception we struggle with.
Yeah,
all can relate.
Educating them. Yeah, and it's taking the right time, the right place to educate, you know. I mean, it's not biting people's heads off, but it's just taking that by you handling your own payment, ordering their own, you know, like I said, simple thing like ordering what kind of cheese you want. You're teaching those folks that, you know what, it was totally fine speaking with somebody with a white cane. They knew what to do. They knew exactly what they wanted. They're, you know, they're normal. I mean,
mm-hmm,
it's,
mm-hmm,
we're nothing, you know. I mean, obviously, that doesn't apply to everybody with white cane, but, you know, you're right. And I love it how your husband looks away.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah.
You know, talk with you. I love that. And it squeezes your hand because that's another hard part is you're standing there, and maybe you are by yourself or you're with a friend, and you don't know when they're looking at you to see what you want because you know how they just look at you sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, yeah.
You know. Right, and then I'm just like, is he looking at me? Is he looking at me? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but that your husband squeezes your hand, I love that, because that's the cue.
Yeah,
like, now.
Make them feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They're not prepared, and,
yeah. I love it. I love that.
This is Cindy, and I've had that type of thing that you're talking about happen in the TSA, and they will ask my husband, and they'll even whisper it kind of to him, like, you know, can she walk through without her cane?
Exactly.
Talking about me on the right there. And I go, hey, I can hear you. You know, like, yeah, talk to me. You know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Exactly the same thing all the time. And they should, mm-hmm, you know, like, and I would think TSA should be better because they see probably blind individuals come through all the time.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense how they can just,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's,
mm-hmm,
the way they look at things, though. My wife and I are flying to Vancouver, and you're boarded by zones 1 to 5. But because she went on the computer and said, I have a disability of blindness, I had a star. So I went up there, I had my white cane and all the features. And when you're declared legally blind, you get a card with a photo ID from the Canadian National Institute of Blind showing you're blind. So I put that out just to show I'm not doing a scam so I can get the early bird boarding. And And the person there says, well, do you have a driver's license?
Oh, my God.
You're asking a blind person, do I have a driver's license? You know what I mean? I think these guys just get sort of hung up in things. But there's also one other thing, too. You're losing your sight, but your hearing's not gone. And sometimes I find people accelerate their talking to me. And, you know, just because I can't see anything, I can't hear things. But, yeah, I've talked to other people that have gone blind. They find people adjust their audio to, higher than it should be. So, I mean, it's just, you know, we're getting back to what I was saying originally, just perception of how people cope and get by. And a nice part about this phone call is that, after a while, medicine can only do so much, and then you have to rely on other things to kick in. And that's why something like a call like this or a group meeting twice a month at the CNIB, I mean, that makes a difference.
Well, you have to get people who can, are in the same situation. I found that that's been helpful to me.
Yeah, like you said in the beginning, Candace, when you were talking, it's finding people who understand, get it, and can give you that advice. And I think after a while, you find that then you're giving the advice and helping others try and move forward, at the same time. So, I mean, it is really reassuring when you know that you're not, going crazy or, are the only overwhelmed one in the whole world. So, it's great. It is good. Do we have anyone else who wants to speak up in chat? I hear someone speaking. I didn't think they were talking to us. So is there anyone else on the line that has anything, anything interesting to say? And
I wanted to speak back to Candace's sharing. I really, really enjoyed your story, and I wanted to say that we've interacted on, this is Cindy, we've interacted on Facebook, and I appreciate all the comments you've given, and the first thing that comes to mind is stuff about games for people to play. You were very helpful, and we just had a whole week of family vacation and played a lot of games, and it made me think about you, and I really appreciated that.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm sure we'd love to hear what you play because we have a good time playing some games here, and that is fun. And whatever you can do interactive to be a part of it is helpful.
Yeah. We played Left, Right, Center. I got that as a stocking
so
stuffer.
Fun.
And we played a game called Naked. And I can't think what else, but we did some team playing with some cards. But I had some giant playing cards where I was able to play with the card games and that kind of thing. So it all worked out
cool.
To be a lot of fun.
Very cool.
Oh, that's
awesome. I have a funny story about that, too. So we were at a party a few months ago, and they were playing they were going to play Cards Against Humanity. And I was like, yeah, we'll play. And one of the ladies, the girls, she was a neighbor, and she was at the table. She's like, well, Candace can't play. And I said, well, you can go home. And I was like, why can't I play? I was using Ira. So when I called Ira and I said, are you comfortable playing Cards Against Humanity? And they're like, absolutely. So I played a few rounds with Ira. And I was like, how dare you tell me that I can't do something? I'll show you I can. And not only that I can, I'm going to win.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's super funny.
We played Cards Against Humanity 2 Christmas Eve ago, and I tell you, everyone was saying, like, well, I'll play with Maria.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, no one will leave you alone. And I thought, no, I can play if I just lean over and have you read my cards, or whatever. But I thought if they whip that out this year, I'm going to call Ira and have them help me. And I'm going to tell, no one needs to sit next to me and hover, the whole thing. We even played charades, and I'll tell you, I just sit really, really close because I do have peripheral, really, really close. And I was killing it, guys. And I think because I am not looking really hard at what the person is doing, I'm almost more imagining in my head. Yeah, I'm almost imagining all the clues and everyone's yelling things, and I'm imagining it in my head. And for whatever reason, I was able to come up with the charade, whatever the name, story, movie, whatever, much faster than a lot of the folks who were just, I think it was using too much visual.
So it was kind of
weird, but, and I was kind of like blew myself away, but, I, And I also, just a quick side note, I also use Ira at Christmas Eve, called up an agent, and I asked him to explain all the gifts that people are opening so I didn't have to ask people, you know, or scream out, like, what is it? And my mother-in-law got a blanket, and along the whole edges of the blanket were big, furry balls. So you can imagine how the rest of the night went with my agent, who kept saying, well, there's the furry balls. She still has the furry balls on, you know, and everybody starts, and this, and it was, and it's really cool because these agents are so easygoing, and he was like, he was having, I think, more fun than me. And, but, you know, they are willing to do whatever it is. But again, I didn't want someone to sit next to me and go, okay, well, they're opening this and they're doing this. And, you know, unfortunately, there are members of my family who insist on, I'm going to sit next to you, and I'm going to help you with, I'm going to help you breathe. I'm going to help you breathe, and I'm going to cut up your food, and I'm going to help you decorate cookies, and, you know, and it's like, no, I can do it myself. I can do it myself, you know. So, you know, it is, it does take a while, but once you start being able to, I don't say stand up for yourself, but kind of in a way, when you get to that point, you know, it's almost freeing, you know, in a way. So, I love that they're playing the games, Cindy. And did you see that, oh, my gosh, the name is escaping me because she was our guest last month, but she posted some photos about big Uno cards. Like, they were huge for the game Uno. And the cards were, I don't even know how big those were, 8 inches by 4 inches maybe. They were big.
Oh, that's cool.
And I know, and I'm like, wow, that's cool too. So, you know, I think, you know, hopefully game companies are, you know, some of them are getting a clue, obviously. So anyone else have anything they'd like to say, bring into the conversation?
So what is the group, the game Naked? I've never heard of that one.
Oh, okay. So each participant gets three scraps of paper, and you write on one of the scraps a person. And the next one you write a place, and the next one you write a thing, and they all go in the bowl together, and you divide up into two teams going all the way around the room. You know, you say one and two all the way around, so the ones are all on a team and the twos are all on a team. So the first round, as somebody's they're on a timer, and as they pull out something from the bowl, they can use whatever description they want to try to get you to guess what's on that slip of paper. So somebody did have to whisper that to me, but they were on the other team, so it didn't matter because you're just trying to get your teammates to guess this at that point. So then you go all the way around with all those. So then you know all the words that are on the scrap of paper because they've all been identified. Round two is charades, and then round three, it's all the same slips of paper, but you only you can use one word only to get people to – and it's really funny. It turns – people have so much fun playing it.
Oh, that sounds good.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, good. Good.
Anybody play Apples to Apples?
That's
Cards Against Humanity. That's like the fun one that you can play with your kids, like Cards Against Humanity. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Yes.
Yeah, so Apples to Apples, they do have, you know, junior version and then, you know, more of the, you know, not adult version, but just, you know, older version of it. But yeah, that's a great game too, and that's all ages can join in on, and I think that's fun.
What's Apple to Apple? Never heard of it.
Wayne,
explain it, Maria.
Well, it's really okay. Well, I think if I recall, basically there's a pile of cards in the middle, I think, and they get flipped over, and it'll be. You know, I'm forgetting how to play, and you have to match it up.
Me too. I mean, I just remember laughing.
Okay, no,
Maria, it's basically just like Cards Against Humanity in that someone will flip over a adjective word, I think, and then all the players pick from their hand a noun card to match with that, and the person who drew each time picks which card is their favorite. I think the only difference
there you go.
Against Cards Against Humanity is I think you may know who put in each card. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And it's sometimes wrong here. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good game. And again, it's all, you know, pretty much the whole family could probably play, where maybe Cards Against Humanity might not be suitable for everybody. Anyway, but good questions, well, I want to take a minute or two, and I'm going to, you know, pull Lissa in on this, but I want to just touch base on what's coming up this year as far as conferences, now that we're in 2019. There is a conference in Vancouver in April, and then, of course, our annual conference in June. And, Lissa, could you give a few details on both? Would you mind?
I don't mind at all. And before I do, I'm just going to mention that, as usual, I've been trying to keep a running commentary over in the Facebook group on the post for this call. So, you know, if people are looking for the games that people have talked about or links over to Ira or whatever's been mentioned, I've been trying to put links up there so you can always go there. But
thank you.
You're welcome. But yeah, to your point about conferences, we've got a couple of great things coming up, and everybody is welcome to both of them for sure. So the next one coming up is an event in Vancouver, and it's sort of being organized by the team up in Canada, Molly and I are helping out a little bit, but they're carrying the bulk of it. And it's taking place on April 27th at a location in Vancouver. There's rates at the Listel Hotel, so there's going to be a gathering at the Listel Hotel the preceding night on April 26th, and then all day the 27th will be the conference. And then the next day, Sunday, they're organizing, like, social, sport, fun, outdoor stuff yet to be fully determined. But similar to the way they did a blind hockey event back when we were in Ottawa a little while ago. And if you go to the LHONCanada.ca website, there's a link to conference information. So if you click that and learn more, you can see the location, the Siegel Building at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, you know, and the cost and the special hotel rate and the ability to register. So that's all on the LHONCanada.ca site. One thing that I think is going to be really super interesting about the conference is that it's being organized to align with ARVO, which is like the big annual vision research conference. So people like Dr. Valerio Corelli over in Italy, who collaborates a lot with Dr. Alfredo Sadoun, has promised to speak there, and we haven't heard from him in a few years, and he's really interesting. And the work he's doing in mitochondrial disease and LHON is all very interesting. And we, like I said, we have not heard from him in a few years, so that should be great. And Dr. Karanja will be there again. He's been at several conferences, and I don't know that we've locked down the other speakers, but there should be a really good scientific portion, you know, as well as other, like, living with LHON stuff. So, you know, definitely if you're on the west side of the world and want to get to a conference, that's an easy, you know, place to go. But if you're in the U.S., make sure you got your passport going, because that's a border issue. But it's not Canada focused. It's, we're, you know, being designed so that anybody comes will get good information. And then in June, the conference in the U.S. That we do in conjunction and collaboration with the United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation. That one takes place in June again. And it starts on the evening of June 26th. If anyone can get there that early, don't have to, but there's a day on the Hill that the UMDF puts on June 27th, and that's a free event where as many people as possible get on buses, and the UMDF brings everybody to Capitol Hill and sets up meetings to lobby with our congresspeople for more research funding. And then, like I said, the night before that on the 26th is when they train us what to do, how we make the ask, what we're going to ask for. And you don't go alone. You don't have to be. I was honestly scared to go the first time, but it's actually fun. Maria and I have the same congressperson, so we got to go together with a Mito doctor here in San Diego. And so you get grouped up with people, and you sort of collaborate, and whatever everyone's good at, you tell your different stories. So if you haven't done it, and if you have the time, it's really fun, and it helps to have as many people as possible. So, again, there's training the evening of the 26th. Day on the Hill is on the 27th. And then the LHON program actually starts on the 28th, and we're going to format it like we did this year. So we'll have a welcome reception late morning on the 28th, and then we'll have lunch and sessions that afternoon. And then the next morning we'll have a full program, and that's it. And then some folks are organizing some social events, which will be a lot of fun, right, Wayne and Maria, and folks organizing that. Again, both. So come to both, come to one if you can. But you know, both will be a great combination of all the things people enjoy in conferences. We'll have great content. We'll have great speakers. There will be a lot of people there who understand LHON, and you know, the things everyone always remember are the connections and the conversations. And but there will also be good programming at both. So if you can come to one, come to the other, come to both, please do.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so y'all mark the calendar. So, you know, one or the other, or both, as you said. And you've heard, some of you have heard many of us go on and on about how awesome the conferences are. And we will be talking about the conference, of course, on these next months of phone calls. We will always do the reminders, and you will start seeing more and more on the Facebook group page. And I know that the Vancouver conference, there's been information already put out on the Canada group, the global group, you know, so that's out and about if you, and plus Lisa's doing links, as she said, on, will be under the LHON post in the main group. So if there's anyone has any conference questions before I turn the recording off and say a few last words.
Maria. If you want to make your hotel reservations, I made mine this afternoon.
And that's for June?
For the June one, yes.
Okay. Well, Jeff's going.
I'm going.
Well, then we're all going.
And I want to say that that's a good idea if you're thinking of going, because you can always cancel it, but there is a conference rate, and, you know, it's not just our crew that's going. It's the UMDF. Starts doing a lot of outreach to the whole mitochondrial disease community. And, you know, they always book fewer rooms than people will take because they don't want to get stuck with the extras. So you're always getting in that situation where if you want to arrive at the last minute, you can always show up at the symposium last minute, but you can't always get, you know, a room at the rate or even at the hotel. And it's so much easier to socialize, which is most of the fun anyways, if you're on property. So if you're thinking about it, I would strongly encourage, you know, reserving at the local hotel because it has the conference rate, and do it early because when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good. Well, listen, I'm going to go ahead and wrap
Maria,
up tonight's call.
Maria, this is Andy. Before we do that, I wanted to go ahead and make an announcement about the change for next month.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Go ahead, Andy. Thank you.
This is Andy. So I will be hosting next month's call. I know we have several veteran callers calling in tonight, and we all hope you call in next month as well, but wanted to make an announcement. We will be changing the phone number for next month. It shouldn't affect anything for most of you. We are actually changing the service we're using, changing from SoundConnect to Zoom. So for anyone who has used Zoom before, it should work really, really well. And for anyone who hasn't, our experience tells us that it's going to work really well. So you can actually call from the internet or call from a website link if that's better for you. But for anyone who's used to or prefers calling from a phone number, we will be providing all of the same information. When I post about next month's call, I'll be sure to include all of this up front. I'm also going to plan to get someone to call into this number to route people correctly if you happen to, by habit, call into this number. But I wanted to give everyone a heads up to pay attention to next month's post because it will have new call-in information.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Yeah, thank you so much. So, yeah, that should be a good switch. Zoom is being, is more and more becoming more and more popular, and I'm looking forward to having everyone on the call next month as well. So, thank you, Andy. And so
that's February 6th.
I was just going to say, speaking of next month, it would be February 6th. Thank you, Andy. And oh, wait, Andy's going to be the host. So, and I'm sure he'll have a great guest lined up as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn off the recording, and we like to hang on for a little bit after the call. And if there's anything anyone would like to bring up after the recording is shut off, you're more than welcome to. If there's any new folks on the line that would like to speak, don't want to be on the recording, that is your time. So let me go ahead and stop the recording.